Hello everyone. Today is Wednesday, November 14, 2018, and we are welcoming Targa instructor Tim Olmsted on this How to Practice NUNVO webinar. Thank you very much, Tim, and welcome everyone.
Thank you, Maya. And thank you, Max, in the background, as usual. And greetings, everybody. It's wonderful to have the chance to spend some time to talk about NUNVO. NUNVO is a weird and wonderful practice, and only a self-select group of truly crazy people take it on. I really appreciate this chance to talk about the meaning of NUNVO, the practice of NUNVO, the logic of NUNVO, the ground, path, and fruition of NUNVO, whatever we want to talk about today. And I personally have done a lot of NUNVO, and really it has been incredibly helpful to me, although getting to know me, you wouldn't know it, but you didn't know me before. So it's a real joy for me to be able to talk about it today with you. So I thought I'd start with just a few simple comments and then open it up to questions. Responding to questions is by far the most important thing. And listening to me talk about NUNVO is not the most important thing, but actually getting your questions answered is by far the most important thing. And whatever question you have, everybody else has that same question, because NUNVO is a fairly condensed world. Whatever question you might have is going to be a good question. So NUNVO is a kind of bitter medicine, you could say. It's a hard practice. It's a long practice. It's a fairly a complex practice. And the reason is because we are hard and complex. And so in order to break through the various patterns of our mind, the various patterns and habits of confusion, confused perception, confused a response to that confusion, we need a strong method, a strong technology, you could say. And NUNVO is exactly that. So the logic of NUNVO goes a little bit like this, that the refuge aspect of NUNVO and the prostration aspect of NUNVO, if we're going to use the analogy of a farmer, this is like breaking up the hard soil of our character altogether, the hard soil of our sort of karmic predisposition. So through a basic faith and acceptance and acknowledgement of the beauty and the reliability of the three jewels, then we go for refuge. And going for refuge, we orient ourselves towards awakening, finally. And then through the practice of going for refuge and then joining that with a bodily expression, which is the prostration itself, and then the expression of mind, which is the visualization, and then the expression of speech, which is the actual refuge formula. This orients ourselves, connects us, and it's a tough practice, and it's like sort of breaking up kind of the kind of hard ground of our sort of tough, independent, somewhat cynical character. Then having done that, Vajrasattva mantra is like going in then and taking out the major boulders, the sort of karmic hang-ups that are still there in our system based on kind of denial or ignorance that we don't see them or we don't acknowledge them. So the beauty of the method of Vajrasattva practice is that we can go in and really explore our kind of psychic plumbing, and what it is that is in the way, what we're holding, the patterns that we're sort of continuing to engage in. And through Vajrasattva practice and the four powers of confession, then we can sort of open the whole system up. Then having done that, then we fertilize the soil, and we fertilize the soil by the practice of profound generosity or mandala practice. And so in mandala practice, then we develop the kind of richness of constant generosity. And this develops what we refer to as virtue or merit. And this, again, as I said, fertilizes the ground. And what we're doing now is we're breaking up the hard ground, we're opening up that ground, and now we're fertilizing that ground, we're enriching that ground in an effort that we become a reliable sort of holder or a reliable environment to plant the seed of wisdom. So if we try to plant the seed of wisdom and the environment isn't right, if the soil is too hard, if the soil is too dry, if the soil isn't rich enough, then that seed of wisdom will not plant. So we could receive pointing out instructions and spectacular Mahamudra instructions or Dzogchen instructions. And if the environment in which those instructions are planted, if it's not a rich environment, a ripe environment, a ready prepared environment, then we won't get the wisdom. And so this whole process then culminates in Guru Yoga. And in Guru Yoga, then we really create the environment of openness and receptivity through the practice or the experience of faith and devotion. And by opening ourselves and connecting ourselves with that kind of mind, then we become ready for the descent of blessings and the descent of wisdom. So this is, you know, roughly the logic of Nundro. And of course, it's a practice that takes a lot of time, but we've taken a lot of time to get to where we are. And now it's going to take a little time to sort of open the whole situation up and make us truly ready for the extraordinary wisdom of this lineage. And the last kind of question or comment about Guru Yoga, in the classic texts and in conversation, we talk about faith and devotion. So in these days, sometimes that's a kind of foreign concept or maybe a challenging concept for people. And yet it really is the operative concept. In the Karmakagyu tradition, the devotion is really, really heightened. It's the kind of secret sauce of the Vajrayana. The secret sauce of the Mahayana is compassion and the power of compassion to melt us, soften us, loosen us, and open us. The secret sauce, the jet fuel of the Vajrayana is devotion. And devotion has the same effect of being able to soften us, open us up. And so compassion and devotion are like two sides of the same coin. But what devotion here means is a kind of open-hearted receptivity, a longing for the truth. That's what devotion means. So those are a few comments, and now I'd like to open it up to you.
Thank you very much, Tim. Can you hear me, everyone?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We had technical trouble with a GoToWebinar last week, so we hope it's going to work better this week. So we had a problem with the question box, so we might ask you to use to raise your hand instead of writing down your questions, because we are not sure we can actually see your questions. So we have two hand raises. I'm going to go first with Anna. Anna, your hand is up, so I'm going to unmute your mic. And if you have a question, you can speak. Hello, Anna.
Actually, my hand was down. I did not raise it. I'm sorry. It's a technical.
Okay. No worry. So I'm going to put, you don't have questions, so.
No, not right now, no.
Okay, so I'm going to put it down and we'll go with the next person. Put the hand down. Okay, so we're going to go with Katarina Malvina. You are having a question and I'm unmuting you.
Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Hi, I'm Katarina. I just want to ask, because I got a little bit confused about if I did something wrong. I don't know if you have any, what do you call it, Vajrayana, Samaya, vow or something. It's because I was talking with a friend, a spiritual friend, about emptiness. And she's not practicing this or Buddhism, but in another tradition. And we talked about emptiness, and I got a little bit what to say or not to say, or would I say something wrong if I think about the nature of mind? So my answer to her was like, it was like space and knowledge. I know it's more like knowing, but I didn't want to say knowing. So I'm just, can you get some advice in what to say or not say too much? And if I did something wrong, what can I do? Thank you.
Yeah. So of course, you know, emptiness is a basic concept in the Buddhist tradition.
Yeah.
It's the basis of everything we do. It's the nature of reality. So mm-hmm. to talk to a good friend about emptiness is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And although it's said to talk about profound truths, if there's not an invitation and the environment isn't right, but you know, with a good friend, there's mm-hmm. an invitation and the environment is right. So to talk about emptiness is great, no problem at all. The restriction comes around the discussion of nature of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of mind, talking about the nature of mind, of course you can say to a good friend, you know, the nature of mind is open and clear and vast and spacious and has the quality of knowing, has the mm-hmm. quality of compassion. That's the sort of sutra approach to nature of mind. I don't see any problem with that with a good friend. But beginning to talk about pointing out instructions and the experience of nature of mind and how the pointing out instruction goes and your experience of the pointing out instruction and trying to give someone pointing out instructions, we don't do that.
Mm, sure. Okay. That's what I thought. So, yeah. But great to know. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. It sounds fine. It sounds great.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Phew.
Yeah.
Thank you,
yeah.
Tim.
Yeah,
bye.
See you. Bye bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Katarina.
Thank you.
That's always good to know what we can and can't do.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Charles Castro, who has a question. I'm going to unmute you. Charles, you will have to unmute your mic. Yes, there you go.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have a question about how to contemplate karma. There are the procedures in the instructions about how to contemplate, and I have two doubts about this. In the step one, the text says to reflect on how the universe, environment, behavior in your mind is related. Should I just read and think about generally, or should I think about in a more specific way, like thinking about the moon influences the tides influences the food in the sea and affects the behavior of the fish and the production of food, etc. Do I have to think in a specific terms, or do I think about more generally? And the other question I have about how to contemplate about karma, if is it good in is it the proper moment to bring to mind the three virtues of mind, the three virtues, speech, body, the non-virtues about body, speech, and mind, and thinking about that.
Yes. I'm looking at the instruction right now, and so depending on the tradition and the text, we can look at this a little bit differently, but the way Mingyur Rinpoche is talking about this is just as you've said. In one way, karma means interdependence. And so to contemplate, just as you're saying, the sort of vast web of interdependence that is at play, the web of interdependence that gives us our very life, that sustains our life, and then we also sustain the life of others. So this is discussion of interdependence. And so you can, you know, you have plenty of time to contemplate. So you can contemplate this on a very specific basis or a very general basis, on an intellectual basis or an experiential basis. In contemplation, you're going to go everywhere. I don't think you can hold your mind too tightly. And then also, just as you say, karma, you can reflect on the importance of working with body, speech, and mind in a way that is conducive to virtue and well-being and being helpful. So all of that is true.
Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Any more? Is there more to that question?
My doubt is all about this, is about the types or styles of contemplations and how to contemplate about karma. I was a little too tight about this, too rigid to follow the instructions. But as you said, you can be more open to, you can be more experiential. You can think about general terms, more specific terms. That's my doubt.
Yeah, don't hold your contemplation too tightly, because then you'll just go crazy. You won't want to do it. So be creative. So you got it.
Can I use another text to enrich, because different books talks about the karma in different ways with different examples? Can I insert pieces of text into these contemplations?
Well, I don't think you need to insert pieces of text, but certainly you should learn widely and broadly and bring all of that understanding into your understanding of karma. So these are just suggestions for contemplation. You don't need to hold them too tightly. If other things come to mind or other logics about come to mind, you know, bring everything into this stage.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Tim.
Yes, great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Charles. So I just want to tell you again, guys, that the box, question box is not working at all. So Max can't access it and I can't see your question. So you will have to, if you don't want to do your questions live, you will have to write your questions in the chat box and not in the question box. So in the chat box, we can read them. So now I'm going to go with the next participant. I'm very sorry if, again, I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly. Liza Kramer. I always forget if it's Liza or Lisa, Tim. You're welcome. Lisa, okay. So sorry,
hello,
Lisa.
Lisa, that's okay. If you mispronounce it, that's fine.
I'm sorry.
Sure some places they have it pronounced Liza, but that's
yes.
Fine.
Thank you.
Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
Good. I'm starting Guru Yoga tomorrow, so this is just so timely. I'm really excited. So I was going through my notes, and it's just a real technical question that I have here. During the mandala practice, okay, we're no longer making the accumulations. We're just holding our hands in the mandala mudra. And I'm just trying to figure out, when is that released? Just looking through my notes here. Yeah, okay, keep your hands in the mandala mudra, offer the outer, inner, and secret mandalas. Then recite the four-line mandala offering, and then conclude. So is it at the conclusion that we release?
Yeah.
At the very end?
Yes.
So the hands are never put in Anjali?
Looking at the conclusion right now, let's see. Do you have the page reference for the conclusion?
The conclusion is on page 36.
36.
Mm-hmm. So when it says the field of merit melts into light and becomes the one taste with me, so then I do the final offering? It doesn't seem to make sense.
What do you mean the final offering?
Oh, well, when I release the mudra. When do I release the mudra? Because usually when we're doing the offering of the 37 element offering, that would be when we say the short.
No, so generally where the concluding verses you would not hold in a mudra at that point.
When do I release the mudra?
Where it says, and conclude with these verses on page 34. To the assembly of gurus, embodiment of three.
Page 34, I'm not getting. Oh, that's when I finish it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Perfect.
Good. Easy.
Okay. Sometimes it's nice to have easy.
Yeah.
I know. If I can get more complicated, I would, but I can't. This is going to be complicated. No, it won't be complicated. I've done this before, so I'm really excited and happy about this. So
great.
Here we go.
Great. Okay. Great, Lisa. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. That's all these practical questions are always great to know. We all had doubts at some point. It's not always easy to understand everything. So I'm going to go with the written questions in the chat box. I don't know who wrote it because it's just written like as organizer. So does practicing Nundro at Bodh Gaya increases merit and wisdom?
I think going to Bodh Gaya increases merit and wisdom, at least merit anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, I mean, there's no question that it is said that to practice in a blessed place increases merit anyway. And merit is an ingredient of wisdom, but who knows about wisdom? But it certainly is said that it increases merit. Doing pilgrimage increases merit. Going to holy places increases merit. And then practicing at holy places is considered to be very, very wonderful. So yeah, the answer is yes.
Thank you very much. So now we're going to go with live questions. Karen, you have your hand. Karen Silvercrop. I'm not sure. I'm very sorry. I'm mutilating your names.
Everyone. Right. Unmute. Am I unmuted?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello, Tim.
Hi.
I'm in the Vajrasattva portion of the practice, and I have two questions, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. One is on page 23, when it says, you know, Lord of all beings, that go for refuge to you. Now, when it says Lord of all beings, what are they saying to, what should I be picturing with that?
So Lord of all beings is just an honorific that means someone who has completely accomplished the path. All the paths and stages, the paths of learning, the paths of purification. It just means someone who has realization. That's what Lord means there.
Okay. Yeah. And then as I'm doing the 100-syllable mantra, should I strictly try to keep my mind on the visualization, or is it okay to also, like, as things come up that I think of that perhaps I regret and renounce, to think of those as I do the practice?
Yes, 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 that's perfect. Both of those things. Both of those things.
And then also practicing everyone in that I'm picturing who I did. Okay, so then also do I keep the visualization of everyone I kept when I was doing prostrations, for instance, of all sentient beings, and also picture them being also cleansed of all these same things?
No.
No.
Not here. Not here. I mean, you can from time to time, but no, not here. So it's you, yourself. The visualization involves you, yourself, being purified.
Okay. So just me, not all sentient beings.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So, you know, during the visualization, as before, you'll have plenty of time. And so many things will come up. And you can, you know, I mean, during the recitation. So be creative, you know, bring up the four powers, then bring up the visualization, then all the whole thing. So really let it flow.
Okay. And just, yeah. I'm sorry, one last question that troubles me. I spend a few hours a day, most days on Ngo Dro. And it's going to take a number of years. And I wonder if that's, okay. Is there any time period that is too long to finish Ngo Dro as long as you're sticking with it?
No. As long as you're sticking with it, you know, one of the great things about being a Buddhist is nobody's watching. So nobody's keeping score. So it's up to you. But, you know, the way it goes, as you know, you've probably known, there are people who have been doing Ngo Dro for 10 years. So that's difficult because then it's hard to keep the flavor and the logic of the practice alive in your life. But if you're doing it for a couple of hours a day, then it will take time, but it's perfectly great.
Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy.
Thank you, Karen. Great questions. We are going to go with, with Jillory Crane. Jillory, I'm going to unmute your mic and you can unmute yourself too. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, Tim. It's always good to see you.
Yeah.
I have another technical question. As you know, because of physical limitations and time limitations and things, I have put off doing my Ngo Dro again for a second time, and now it's opening up. In the meantime, I've been doing my nature of mind practice with Nectar of the Path. So I am up to three. I'm working with emptiness is spontaneous presence. So when I start my Ngo Dro, I now am totally out of sync for how my nature of mind practice would fit with the Ngo Dro. What I was thinking of doing is I love Nectar of the Path, and I was thinking of just continuing to do a short session each day and continue doing my nature of mind practice in that, in terms of the level that I'm on. And then, not sure, then doing some nature of mind in the Ngo Dro, what would I be doing?
So it's up to you. If you're doing the so-called homework for nature of mind and Nectar of the Path, then you can just do the Ngo Dro on the basis of accumulation. But remember, you know, when you're doing Ngo Dro or any practice, that when you're doing, using your imagination, et cetera, come back again and again to nature of mind throughout the Ngo Dro practice.
Right, right.
I know you know that. But in terms of doing the homework, you can track it within Nectar of the Path. That's fine.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then just keep going in and out of it during the Ngo Dro.
Yeah.
Great. That's my only question right now. Thank you.
Good. Great, Jillory.
Thank you very much, Jillory. That's a great question. We are going to go now with a questions in the chat box. That is from Kate Dutton. Dear Tim, thanks for the webinar. Is it recommended to finish doing the four thoughts contemplation before doing refuge prostrations? Because I was combining them together and it felt like too much. I have found doing the four thoughts contemplation followed by the nature of mind meditation more effective. Any thoughts?
Could you read it again? Because I missed the first couple words.
Yes, yes, no worry. Is it recommended to finish the four thoughts contemplation before doing refuge prostrations? Because I was combining them together and it felt like too much. I have found that doing the four thoughts contemplation followed by the nature of mind meditation more effective.
Yes. Don't layer them at the same time. Finish the four thoughts first in any given session. Yes.
Great. Thank you, Tim. So we have more hand raised. I'm going to go with Okir Abuchinov. I'm also hoping I'm saying that correctly. I'm so sorry.
Yes, я понимаю, что с Бибишек я не вижу Гурьёна.
Hello, Okir. Okir, you alive and you can make your questions? Can you hear us?
Hi, Tim.
Hi.
I have a question about Edom's refuge tree. We have an image of this refuge tree with Tibetan names of, but I was not able to find any information about some of these Edoms, where I can find information. And also, I don't know some lamas at this refuge tree, and I imagine other lamas. So what's your advice? Should I imagine only lamas that I know, or I just should imagine some abstract lamas from this Kagyu tree, but I cannot imagine them clearly?
Gosh, if you go on the internet and I would do it right now while we're talking, but it would crash my system. If you go on the internet and search Karma Kagyu lineage tree, there are a number of places that will come up where the image is interactive, where you point your cursor to one of the images, and then it gives you the whole biography of who that person is. So see if you can find it on Google, and if you can't, email me and I'll send you a link.
Okay, thank you.
So there's a lot on the internet, and it's really great. And so it answers all of your questions. And then of course, all those figures, they seem a little abstract. There's no question about it. So that's just the way it is. So you do, you know, the point is we're appreciating lineage of wisdom altogether and our lamas. But here we're connecting to the Karma Kagyu lineage. But it doesn't need to be too tight, if that makes sense. But it really is good to have a chance to learn who those people are a little bit. So email me and I'll send you a link if you can't find it.
Okay, thank you. Also, I have a question about Vajrasattva practice. I got a transmission from a young Rinpoche, including some specific Dzogchen practices of Vajrasattva, and I have a question: can I use this practice for Nyandro, or should I use our usual Vajrasattva practice and to practice Yang Rinpoche Vajrasattva practice on some days? Usually I practice it on 15th and 13th moon days.
Yes, so do that practice separately. Mm-hmm. And do this practice of Vajrasattva within this text. So this is kind of true for all practice texts altogether and all Nundro texts, so that you do the practice within the text. And then if you have another Vajrasattva practice, it's fine to do it, but do it separately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
Good. So I'm good with questions.
Good. Enjoy.
Thank you very much, Okir. Thank you. Okay, so we have another person. This is Erin McConleese. I'm going to unmute you. Hello, Erin.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Great.
My question, this is actually kind of a response to somebody who asked earlier. I've probably been doing Nindro for 25 years, but I've always consistently done it at least two or three times a week. And I've intermixed it with some of my other practices, Green Tara or Chenrezig or such, but I always go back to Nindro because it's one of my favorite practices. And I'm currently I do prostrations weekly, and I also then, when I'm not doing prostrations, will do Vajrasattva. And I originally was I got the empowerment for Vajrasattva from Kuncho Gyaltsen Rinpoche. And then I was also at one of Minyor's retreats. And I was not familiar with the idea of the short Vajrasattva mantra. So I've been doing, you know, probably a mala or half a mala of the long Vajrasattva, and then I'll do 1 to 1.5 malas of the short Vajrasattva mantra. But does that actually count towards that 111, or is that just so that you are consistently doing it?
Yes, so that's what we refer to as the amendment mantra. So in other words, you know, if for syllables we've dropped and mistakes we've made and times we've been spaced out, the sort of short one takes care of that. Okay. So you don't count that one.
Okay, that's good to know. All right.
Yeah. Great.
So then, I mean, in the past, we've done 3 of the long Vajrasattva mantras to account for what you just said, spacing out or messing up. So do you not do those? Does it matter if you do 3 longs or 100,000 shorts? I mean, it just doesn't matter. It's whichever.
Oh, no, you have to do 100,000 longs.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Oh, if it would be wonderful if it wasn't the case, but unfortunately.
All right. That's good to know. I appreciate
it. Okay. Yes. Thanks. Enjoy.
Thank you so much, Erin. That was a question that you wrote down, so I'm very happy that you made your questions live. I'm going to go now with another written questions that was sent by Peggy Choval. She's asking if you have any tips for combining accumulation with sitting and contemplation.
Oh, Maya, you just blipped out. Tips for accumulating.
Oh, sorry.
What?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So any tips for combining accumulations with sitting and contemplation?
So if sitting means sitting practice, then, you know, it depends on how you want to do it, when you want to do it. The first time I did Nundro, the instruction was to do 20 minutes of sitting before a session of Nundro and 10 minutes after. So it really depends on what works for you. And then there is contemplation woven throughout the Nundro. So the 4 thoughts are the contemplation. And then, as someone said before, you know, contemplating the 4 powers, it comes up there, contemplating the virtue of the lineage and one's appreciation, it comes up there. So, you know, mind is moving all the time during the practice. And so, you know, to the degree that we're thinking about or appreciating the qualities of the practice, the qualities are being pointed to in the practice, that's contemplation. Then recitation and sitting meditation is the meditation itself. So we're going to use all of those all the time. But in terms of formal sitting practice, just formless sitting practice, shamatha, or nature of mind, that goes before we start the session or at the end of the session.
Okay, great. We have other questions on the same topics, accumulation and recitation. So I'm going to go with those ones, and then we will have another live questions.
Okay.
This one was written by Martha Willem, and she's asking, in the course of reciting mantras, a rote quality can occur. Any tips for keeping many repetitions fresh?
No. This is not so easy. And sometimes, you know, like Vajrasattva mantra, it just, you know, it becomes quite rote. And then it doesn't. And then it does. And then it doesn't. So it's all okay, actually. I don't think we need to try to make some huge meaning out of the mantra or to imagine it in a very vivid way or to feel like we're having some special experience. All of that experience will come in various places at various times. We don't have to make them happen. So, of course, you know, when we do the mantra with a visualization and we remember the meaning, that's the ultimate way of keeping it fresh. but it's just the nature of things that often it will become not fresh, and we just keep going. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why Nundro is so hard, isn't it? Because there is so many repetitions.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with a live questions from Robert Alcock. I'm going to unmute you, Robert. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I wrote this in, but I'm not sure if it came through. It's about the refuge visualization. In the liturgy, it's the traditional refuge tree. It's kind of outlined in the liturgy. But the Turgot instructions have discovered a different visualization. I mean, I understand it's sort of complementary, but it's to visualize Shakyamuni Buddha singly in the center of the refuge tree, and to use that as a visualization and to focus on the qualities of him and so on. I'm just kind of wondering what sort of advice as to which to follow, because it's sort of, when I do the liturgy, I also read through in English as well to kind of give it, you know, a clearer meaning. So doing the alternative Shakyamuni visualization, it's kind of a little bit incongruous or confusing, but I can see how kind of both would work or could work. But have you got any sort of advice on that?
So are you referring to the visualization as outlined in the text?
Yeah, so in the actual liturgy in the text, we have, you know, the description, the traditional description of the refuge with, you know, the Buddhas to the right and the Sangha and the Dharma behind and so on. And
so you're referring to the Kamra Kagyu Wanchuk Dorje liturgy?
The chariot for the noble path.
Yeah, so it says, I'm not sure, maybe I'm looking at this a different thing, but it outlines the visualization with Vajradhatu surrounded by the Kagyu Gurus, etc.
Yeah, it's just that there's the Turgot guide for the Nundro. On that, it's in the instructions for the practice at that point, the instructions refuge. It's in step two. It's relation to refuge to all sources of refuge, and it's to imagine Shakyamuni in the center, and it with his with his rightly touching the ground and his left in the bathing bowl and so on. But it outlines that as the main visualization and doesn't mention the kind of.
Right. This is
it's kind of a simplified, obviously, or an alternative, but
so who did you start doing Nundro under? Where did you get the initial, you know, reading transmission to do Nundro?
On the Path of Liberation retreat. Okay. I mean, I did actually start practicing a Lungchen Nyingchik Nundro, but I sort of abandoned that in favour of doing the chariot. But yeah, this is I went to the Path of Liberation retreat and had all the reading transmissions and so on from India.
Thank you for bringing this question up. I am not sure. I'm not sure. Let me dig into it a little bit. Email me, tim@taragar.org, and sure. Let me see what I find out.
Okay. It's just that it is in the official Nundro Turgot guide.
I see it. Yeah, I do see it. Let me find out. Email me and let's go from there. Is that okay?
Cool. Yeah, no problem.
Good.
Thanks. I will do.
Good.
Thank you, Robert. And we have another question from Margot Becker. Margot, I'm going to unmute yourself and
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. So I am one of those long-term Nindro practitioners. I definitely take lots of breaks. I do other practices, and I struggle with that. And I would say that one of the biggest problems is the guilt at not having a steady Nindro practice, which I'm sure is really a pointless waste of time to do that. Anyway, I do wonder what you have to say to those of us like me who stay with it, but with lots of breaks and time is passing.
So why the breaks?
Why
do you take breaks?
There are other practices that I do. There, you go to teachings and there are incredible practices to do, and time is limited in the morning, and sometimes my back hurts and things like that.
Do you do a lot of practices because you want to, or you feel that there's a commitment to do them?
Do I do a lot of practices because I just feel I don't have enough, maybe enough direction from a teacher. So I'm kind of desultory. I'm kind of wandering too much. There's great practice. They're all great. All of the practices are great. Every single one. But you know, not having a really kind of strong connection to one teacher, that is both wonderful and difficult. And, you know, Rinpoche has talked about bees, right? Bees who go from flower to flower. So there are problems with being a bee, but also, you know, beautiful things about being a bee.
So I'm going to tell you my opinion and what I've been told, but I'm not the guru. So I'm just going to tell you what comes to mind for me personally. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So there's an interesting story of Padampa Sanjay, the great Indian master who traveled and spent some years in Tibet. And when he returned, his friend said, "Well, what about those Tibetans? How are they?" And he said, "Those Tibetans, they practice 100 practices and don't realize any of them, but we practice one and realize them all." So the point here, I think, is that the essential intent and meaning of all sadhana practices is the same. And Nindro is a preparation to create the ground, as we were saying before, to then go on and do sadhana practices or nature of mind practices. So I personally would encourage you to have some confidence that basically all the practices are pointing to the same thing. They're all trying to do the same thing. But Nindro creates the situation where the other practices come to fruition because of the quality of merit and purification that happens in Nindro. So I would encourage you to lean into Nindro, and that also takes care of the guilt thing. And so lean into Nindro. That would be my suggestion. And then, yeah, I don't know if that's helpful, but that comes to mind for me.
I think it's probably not going to go that way.
Well, it's completely up to you. Then fine, then do Nindro. The only problem with doing Nindro in that very, very sporadic way is that it's hard to feel the kind of progression of the experience of Nindro working for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just saying, unfortunately, I've been struggling with it for a long time, and sometimes the breaks are about just wanting to not struggle with it, you know, and let it be what it is.
So what's the struggle with Nindro particularly? Is there a struggle with, particularly with Nundro?
Sometimes there's just a physical struggle. I mean, that's part of it at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A physical struggle around doing prostrations?
Yeah. I mean, I do have pretty serious back pain at this point. So,
That you can work with.
I'm not going to blame it on that. I think I take that back. I think it's more a problem with the mind. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if you have back problems, you can do tabletop prostrations, or there's ways around that. Don't let that be the.
Let's just take that off the table, so to speak. Okay. Yeah. That's the use. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Anyway, it's frustrating to kind of continue to get the answer, just do it, because I'm having trouble just doing it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, Nundro is a very confounding practice. There's just no way around it. You have to be half crazy to do it in the first place. So, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing that you're going to have to continue to struggle with and find a relationship with that feels good for you. Does that make sense?
I'm willing to do that. Thank you. It does help. Yeah. You say
I never met the Buddha, but I promise you, no practice was ever designed to make us feel guilty or to frustrate us.
Yeah.
So that's stuff that we bring to the table, as you're already suggesting.
Thank you. It does help to hear you say that we're all crazy.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we are completely crazy. And consequently, we could take try as best as possible to take some fundamental delight in Nundro, however difficult it is. Take delight that we have found this remarkable vehicle, this extraordinary medicine, and that it's been, you know, that we have a connection to it. So that, just on the face of it, is a wonderful thing. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you, Margot. That's a great question. I think we have been a lot of people feeling the same. So
yeah.
You're not alone.
Thanks.
So we have, we are an hour now, but we still have a lot of questions written, and we still have a hand raised. So I would like to go through some of the questions that were written, because they are very practical and maybe they might help a lot of people that have the same doubts, and they are very quick to answer. So we have one by Vajra Spook that is asking, if I want to do the Nundro after having completed the homework for the Nectar of the Path, is it enough to just calm the accumulation of specific Nundro practices?
Yes.
So, for example, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was an easy one. We have...
That was Jillary's question too. Yeah, that's
yes,
fine.
Yeah. We have another one that's related to what we just talked about, back pain. We haven't been into that, but I'm sure many people have the same situation. So if you have an injury, should you continue with modified prostration or wait until you recover?
Go ahead and modify your prostration in a way that works for you.
Great.
Yeah.
And another one that's by Jane Tara. Is the six yogas of Naropa still part of the path of liberation?
Yes, Mingyur Rinpoche just hasn't started teaching it yet.
Yeah.
And white Tara practice.
Great. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah.
And something that's also very related to what we just talked in our last questions alive, how to keep this desire and intention to practice with diligence every day.
Yeah, so this is a very, it's an excellent question, particularly regarding Nundro. And as before, it's not an easy question to answer. In any practice, in any endeavor, but in any practice, we need a good carrot and a good stick So the stick, which is what we generate when we're contemplating the four thoughts, the stick is that things don't work so well, that I want to follow the path, I want to wake up, I want to discover my nature, because without it, it just doesn't work. That's the basic point of the four thoughts. The perfect carrot is the example of the lineage and our gurus and the possibility of waking up. So if those are vivid to us, then the practice will be easy and vivid. If we become inured or dull to that, the practice will be difficult. And in this day and age, it's very easy to get lost in the pathways of samsara because it feels good. It's fun. It feels good. It's entertaining. And we can often begin to think, well, maybe samsara is just fine after all. And then why do all this practice? So we need to remember the what got us into this in the beginning and what the possibility is for some accomplishment and what life would be like for that, if only because we've seen it in somebody else. I was at a gym, a place to work out the other day, and I saw someone had written on the wall something very interesting. They said, if you want to quit, remember what got you here in the first place. I thought that was really beautiful advice. So I'll leave you with that.
Thank you, Tim. That's great. Yeah. That's really great. And that is answering to a lot of other written questions that were there. Okay.
Yeah.
I have another quick one that is on the time of meditation. I don't have 1 hour and a half to practice Nundro. Can I split into session in the day? And is there a better time in the morning or in the night to practice Nundro?
I think whenever you're fresh, you can do whatever you want and whatever is the easiest and freshest for you. Yeah.
Okay. And the splitting practice into is fine too, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So...
Do you want to try to tackle a couple of other live questions?
Yes, yes. I'm going to go with Nick Osnes. I'm going to unmute you. And you can do your question live. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Nick.
I have a comment. Another carrot, maybe. I read something that Thaisa Tu said about Nundro, and that was that you can become enlightened doing Nundro. It's not like you have to finish Nundro and only then can you become enlightened. It's a complete practice, each part of it in and of itself. And I found that to be very encouraging. Yeah.
Really great. Also, as we say in the tradition, the preliminaries are more profound than what comes after. So, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Nick. We still have 2 live questions. Do you want to go with those?
Yeah.
Erin, I'm going to unmute you, and you can do your question.
Thank you for taking another question. This is kind of a quick one. When I get to the point of needing to start my mandala practice, who do I contact to get that next empowerment or teaching or in order to start doing that practice?
Erin, you need to go to the Path of Liberation 3 and 4 retreat.
Okay.
Yep. That's where you get it.
Okay.
In Mingyur Rinpoche's world, that's where you get it.
Okay.
Yep. Great. Yeah.
Thank you. And Archir, I'm going to unmute you again so you can do your question, and I think this will be the last one.
Okay, thank you, Maya. I have a question about purification process during prostration. When I imagine, not imagine, when I got an idea during when I... When I push my hands together, I got an idea that my body, speech, and mind are purified, but I cannot really visualize it. I cannot really feel it, how it's purified. So is it enough to feel that it has purified, or what should I do?
Yes, that's enough. Wow. So purification is a very long process. And that it involves everything we're doing with our body, speech, and mind when we practice. And so you don't see it happening. You can't see it happening right away. So that it's an accumulative process over a long period of time. And then one of the ways that you know that there, some purification has taken place is our attitude changes. You know, we open up, we loosen up, we have a softer, gentler mind. We see the world in more a kind of more generous way. That's how we know that purification happens. But we only see that later on. We never can see it happening directly.
I see it. Okay. Thank you very much, Jim.
Great. My pleasure.
Thank you so much, O'Kieran. Thank you so much, everyone. I think we actually... Just going to mute you. I think we've been seeing all the questions we had, actually. Great. So it's great.
Great.
Yes. Do you want to...
Okay, well... Again, I thank you, everybody, for your interest in this practice and for doing the practice and your good questions. And we can talk again. I look forward to it. Nundro is wonderful. It's wonderful in its complexity and its difficulty and its simplicity. Everything about Nundro is really amazing. And like I just said before, generally, we're not going to see... One of the ways that we see the practice of Nundro working is that we see our confusion. That's good news. That's the sign that the practice is beginning. That's the sign of purification, actually. That actually our habits and confusion become separated from mind and we begin to see them. They become an object of our awareness rather than completely mixed with our awareness. So along the path of Nundro, things... You know, we often experience a tremendous amount of confusion. This is a sign that Nundro is working. And it's one of the reasons why it's good to continue Nundro and get through it. Otherwise, we're kind of stuck and we could be stuck in that place where we're basically just seeing a lot of confusion. So I encourage everybody to keep delight in just the fact that we have the opportunity to do this remarkable practice. And we'll talk again.
Thank you very much, Tim. So thank you everyone for your great questions. I just wanted to add, maybe they can reach out to you and Court if they have more questions about the practice. Yes. So if you want to reach Tim, it's tim@tergar.org. And if you want to send an email to Courtland, it's court@tergar.org. And they will be very happy.
It's Courtland. Isn't it Courtland?
Yeah, it's Courtland. Sorry. It's Courtland@tergar.org. Thanks, Tim.
So Thank you, Max, in the background, too.
Most welcome. Thank you, Max, to be helping with the question box. And we'll be happy to see you on the next webinar. Bye-bye, everyone. Have a good evening, a good end of the day.
Okay, bye-bye.